You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. And gents, Ryan Sessegnon is a name that is not going away this summer. He could be leaving the club, but we'll be talking about him either way. First of all, he was in action for the England under-21s last night against France. What did you make of his performance?
I thought he looked comfortable in the game. He didn't look lost. He was definitely getting on the ball a lot of the time. I thought that, you know, the system they were playing, I didn't think suited him that well. And again, that's another point that we've mentioned before, that a lot of the time to get the best out of him, you do need to be playing in a system that does suit him. Obviously, he was playing out wide left, which is good to see, because we've seen him play at left back under-20s various times, but Jay De Silva, I think, was taking up that role. So, yeah, Sessegnon, I think, you know, you had him and Tamari Gray sort of swapping wings fairly often, and that's not really what Sessegnon does. I think they're expecting him sort of to be like an out-and-out winger and to drive inside, and that's sort of not really what he does. But I didn't think he looked bad last night. Whenever he got on the ball, he did look comfortable, and yeah, it was just in that really solid first half an hour for England, he looked really good.
Yeah, it's interesting you say about him like playing in the inverted wing position, because he definitely tries to play that a lot for us this year, to not that much success. I was kind of surprised to see him start as well, because I know that the under-21s rotate their wingers quite a lot, and you know, him and Damari Gray is quite a formidable pairing, really. But yeah, I thought he played really well, having watched the game, and obviously had the disallowed goal too, which was clearly offside, but good celebration from him anyway.
That's the main thing. The celebration's good. We're all happy. What's the latest in terms of his future?
I don't think anything's changed. I think him going away on international duty has sort of stopped any, not interest, but stopped any sort of progression in what's going to happen in his future. Obviously, he told the club wouldn't be signing a new contract because he wants to move to Spurs, because he wants to work under Pochettino. You know, Fulham for some reason want £45 million, which simply isn't going to happen. I mean, we'd be lucky to get that for Mitrovic. So I think that if we're looking at the fee of that £25 million, I think that's, you know, a reasonable fee for a player who's only got 1 year left on his contract. You kind of, from the club's perspective, they do want to sell him, because if they don't, you know, come January, all the foreign clubs can start speaking to him, and we'll speak to Richard later on about the other links linking him with Inter Milan, that, you know, they can speak to him and they can pretty much go on a free transfer. Remember when Dembele went to Celtic, we pretty much got nothing. So I think from the club's perspective, they'll want to sell him this summer, because they get some money back. Well, not money back, or money that they, you know, invested in his youth development at the club. So I think that it is only a matter of time before he does make the move. But, and it looks like if it's in England, most likely it's going to be Spurs. But there is always going to be the links to the European clubs abroad, which obviously I'd prefer him to go to.
It is interesting, these fees being mentioned. Obviously, I know me and Dom spoke about how, you know, the fee doesn't actually affect the average fan. It's not going in our pocket. But anyway, especially with Spurs, I expect there to be lots of add-ons to any kind of fee there will be anyway. Because, like, everyone always quotes the $30 million Sissoko fee, but that only runs to $30 million if he stays there for 5 years, which is kind of a little bit, at the time, you would have thought it was unlikely. So, you know, Daniel Levy's, you know, renowned negotiator in these sorts of things. I reckon, as Dom says, they won't be paying any more than I'm even tempted to say 20. They won't be more than 20, but they might stretch 20.
Well, up front, I don't think they'll be more than 20. There might be the plus, the more incentives of if he makes, I don't know, 5 international appearances, scores his first England goal,
wins the Ballon d'Or,
wins the Ballon d'Or, or Spurs win the league, or Spurs win the Champions League. Then we get money from that, and obviously maybe a sell-on clause because you know Spurs pretty much are a selling club. So yeah, I think I can't see him playing any more up front than £20-25 million. But you know, if we're looking at other players we're going to sell, we do need to recuperate some money in this transfer window from the £100 million we spent last time. Obviously, we'll talk about John Mikel Seri later. But, you know, you got Anguissa, you got Mitrovic, you got Sessegnon. Apart from that, there's not any players here who you're going to be getting huge amounts of money for.
When you're talking about recuperating money from last summer, would a potential transfer fee from Sessegnon be reinvested in the playing squad?
I'm tempted to think no.
You look at our team, right? There isn't many. It's not like last summer where we need to spend money on a fair few players. We've got the core who got us up last season. If you look at midfield, you've got Johansson, you've got McDonald, you've got Kearney. You look at front, Mitrovic stays, you've got Mitrovic. You've got Cabano, you've got Aite, you've got Kamara. You know, you look at the back, you've got Tim Ream, you've got Joe Bryan, you've got Marcus Bettinelli, you've got Alfie Mawson. You know, I think that if I'm looking at right back's the slot, right back and right wing are probably the main slots I'm looking at. You know, or maybe the wide positions, basically the wingers and the right back, and a right back is basically what I'm looking for. But it actually is more about pumping the team with squad players, the likes of Ollie Norwood, those sort of players. I don't think there's many first teamers we actually need in this team, unlike last season.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that is kind of a big if there is, if Mitrovic stays, which I know we're going to talk about later. But if we have to go out and find a striker to fire us back, or hopefully fire us back, then that would definitely change things.
That would be quite something. We're talking Women's World Cup tonight as well. A quick update for you from the Lionesses. It's England 1, Japan 0. And it's looking like a good night for Scotland as well. Jenny Beattie has made it 2-0 against Argentina. Scotland, as things stand, can still get out of Group D. As things stand, the Lionesses, who are playing some lovely stuff, will top the group.
Isn't there an issue here where the side of a draw they end up on would actually be the harder side if they win
right,
the group?
This is nonsense. This is all nonsense. We had this in the Men's World Cup last year where, oh, let's lose to Belgium so we finish second and we get an easier draw.
Correct
what
decision.
A load. Yeah, of course.
We've got to Gareth semi-finals if we won the group, though.
Fine, I don't care. It's rubbish. All you can do as a football team is go, right, I'm playing you and I'm going to try and beat you. Any talk of gaming a draw, deliberately throwing a game against Japan to get a nominally easier draw, is absolutely ridiculous. Rant over.
I don't think it is. I think if you're on the easier side of draw, you're going to want to be on that side.
So you would throw it tonight, Dom?
Well, England men's side threw it last year and I think it helped us.
Do you think England threw it? I don't think that's what they did.
Adnan Januzaj score, so we definitely threw it.
Well, by the same logic, as well. Adnan Januzaj was on the pitch, so Belgium tried to throw it.
Both teams were trying to throw it. That was in, but I do think
both teams were resting their players. They weren't throwing it. It's called rotation.
No, you're doing a World Cup, mate. I'm afraid. Just play your best 11, and you'll win. But no, I think you know. All things aside, I do think you know the England women. They've actually. It's the first time I feel like. Nearly the entire country has been behind a women's team in a major tournament.
Yeah, I agree.
100%. I don't know what that's down to because obviously was it the Euros a few years ago was it the semi-finals they got to?
Yeah.
And so obviously
is that Belgium as well?
Possibly. And I remember that being you know a big thing, but I don't remember the amount of people watching it being this big. And I think it's really helped that it's been on terrestrial TV as well. If you look at the Cricket World Cup, for example. You know, there's been some great matches and people who have got Sky can watch it, but people who don't really know what's going on there. And I think that's why there's been such a big Women's World Cup fever.
I think that's absolutely true. In just a moment, we're going to be turning our attentions back to Fulham. On the transfer rumour mill last night, I was speaking to Cameron Ramsey of Fulhamish. Now, he said to me that he reckons Jean-Michel Seri doesn't have the required bottle, the required grit and tenacity to make it in the Championship. Well, if that's the case, why is he being linked with Inter, Napoli and AC Milan? In just a moment, we'll be asking Rich Hall, chief correspondent at Football Italia.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Rich Hall, Chief Correspondent for Football Italia and also Love Sport's Italian Football Correspondent. Good evening, Rich. Thanks for joining us. Are these links between Michel Seri and Inter, Napoli and AC Milan believable?
Evening, gentlemen. Yes, they are. It seems so, especially from a report from CalcioNapoli24.com that came out last night that said the representatives at Seri had met. Whilst these links are believable, in the sense of, you know, it is common in today's game for many players, just agents start talking about personal terms, it is still speculation because there's a lot of things that need to fall into place. And so even though that Napoli may have made a move to start to talk to Seri, and as you guys will know, you know, it's a huge decrease in price of what they would look to get him for. It still, at the moment, may not make sense to Napoli or Inter. And even though Milan haven't started talk to them officially or that have been talked about yet, Milan still could be possibly a preferred destination due to their financial fair play restrictions and the sort of player they're looking for right now.
Yeah, so if we're looking at the three sides, obviously Napoli, Inter and Milan, who do you think he would sort of suit the most?
Well, it's interesting at the moment because, you know, all three teams are going through quite an overhaul. Inter and Napoli, because of the move from Maurizio Sarri going to Juventus, both teams see it as an opportunity to really go and catch Juventus. This is the season you do that, in a sense. There will be a transition at Juventus. There will be, it will take time for Sarri to get his ideas in there. It's a huge leap for them in style, just in personality. It's so far removed. It's quite incredible in Italian football. So both Napoli and Inter are seeing this as a chance. Now, Inter's midfield is still quite packed in a sense. And they've got a player like Marcelo Brozovic, for instance, who, you know, he's a very possibly better player. And, you know, Conte is going to look for players who want to work for the team, want to really put in the effort. You know, he's a bit of a Marcello Lippi disciple in some respects, and he wants that team ethic. So a lot of players like that Inter potentially already still have. You look at Napoli, they're going to, according to all reports in Italy today, they're going to announce the signing of James Rodriguez to coincide with the signing of Maurizio Sarri to Juventus, both press conferences potentially at the same time.
Is that a bit tin pot, Rich?
Oh, it is massively. It's completely Italian. They're doing it to one-up themselves. It's almost like the first thing they do, they win this season. So, but the other signings they've been linked with, people like Manolas from Roma, 36 million release clause, and Napoli's president De Laurentiis says, we can't afford this. When they've still got players like Alani midfield, it makes it look like that Seri would be maybe more of a backup for Napoli. And so to complete that, you look at Milan. Milan are really in trouble at the moment. They're looking like they're going to withdraw from the Europa League at the moment because of financial fair play restrictions. Even Gazidis, as you guys all know from Arsenal, has come out and said to Milan, look, you know, we've got Gianpaolo now as our new coach. He works with youth players. We've got to look at our expectations of where we need to be next season. We're starting from the bottom almost. We're going to rebuild through youth. This sort of signing them for 15 million euros, I mean, I know he's 27 years old, but Sarri makes sense here. Like I said, there's been no reports of him talking to Milan at this moment in time, but from that sort of player, the sort of player that Gianpaolo likes as well, Sarri makes more sense in Milan.
Do you think Sarri would suit the Serie A more broadly, Rich? Is he going to get more space, more time on the ball?
It's interesting, that question, because it happens a lot, because you look at Italian football over the last 10 years and the pace of the game, when you look at teams like Napoli, Roma,
Lightning
Atalanta,
in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why people look at Maurizio Sarri. Sarri seems quite difficult. But Maurizio Sarri, you know, in such high regards because he plays such quick-tempo football like Montella. However, the best way to describe it between Italian and English football is, I always like talking about Patrick Evra, when he said that when he played for United, he was allowed to overlap and do what he wanted. But when he played for Juventus, he played in grids. So in some respects, it all goes down to the tactical acumen of the player. Again, you know, it will depend on the fact of sometimes in a midfield position like this, certain players like playing in a system, like playing when one moves, the rest move, and they know where they're at. It just completely depends on the mentality of the player, because some might play well in England, where they've got just can be a free spirit almost, but when they have to play almost like in a chess game, it doesn't work out for them. So it will be interesting to see how he plays.
Obviously, there was another rumour that came about after last night's England 21 game that Tutor Sport was saying that obviously Inter Milan's technical director was looking at Ryan Sessegnon. Do you think there's really any interest there?
Yeah, potentially, actually, because I think for two reasons. One, Inter have a huge change again, like we said before, with Conte coming in. Conte is going to... I mean, he's already got the youth team, all the youth teams from under-12s all the way through to the Primavera playing 3-5-2. They're changing now. That's how they're going to do things. You know, he's gone over with Beppe Marotta, the ex-Juventus director, who helped, well, started Juventus and Conte, started to win all those titles all that time ago. So if he's playing 3-5-2, he needs good fullbacks, he needs quick fullbacks. Now, first and foremost, Inter don't have that. Even though people like Danilo D'Ambrosio, you know, will work hard, he needs fullbacks. There's no question. Sessegnon fits the mould, hard-working, and at the same point, he's technically good. However, you know, again, there's two things to this. One, Antonio Conte's knowledge of England will have brought Sessegnon to his attention. Secondly, you know, more English players are looking to go abroad now, so it's sort of almost on trend. But again, it depends how much Fulham would look to ask for that, because whilst there's a misconception Inter can spend a lot of money this summer, the financial fair play restrictions are off, but they need to sell a player before the end of June for 30 to 40 million, or a group of players. Otherwise, they can't spend huge amounts. So,
who do you think they'll shift, Rich?
Well, all the talk is of Mauro Icardi, but that's a whole other story because, you know, Mauro Icardi spent the whole last season almost on semi-strike saying he wanted a new contract because he knew no one could touch him. And, you know, there was a whole PR issue. His wife obviously wanted Nari's agent. It caused a whole stir. And now he's sort of declared his love for the club again. Conte's not even entertaining the fact of him joining the pre-season camps. So they need to shift him. But who wants a player who at the moment is running his contract negotiations through Instagram? It's quite difficult. And so Icardi's now turned around and brilliantly said, well, I'm not going anywhere. So you've got this... Icardi's the main option, but again, it looks like there's more chance of a swap deal with Juventus. But, you know, they've been looking to try and offload Ivan Perisic, but quite incredibly, actually, there's not been that many takers.
Yeah, well, getting on a bit, I suppose, in the case of Perisic.
Yeah, potentially. And he didn't have the best of seasons last season. Frustratingly for Inter fans, I think what happens for them is they've got this amazing Primavera or youth team section. And a guy that obviously quite a few teams in the Premier League now, Nicola Zanoli Zaniolo from Roma, who everyone's talking about for selling for 50, 60 million at the moment from Roma, came from Inter's youth system when they just quite haphazardly offloaded him. You know, Italy's 21s are playing at the moment. Federico Bonazzoli is wanted apparently by 18, 19 clubs. So Inter often just get rid of their most promising youth players, whereas realistically they could do with offloading some of the older guys.
Well, it sounds like quite a busy summer in Italy, and it'll be interesting to see if Seri does end up there. Rich, thanks for your time. Wonderful as ever. Rich Hall there, chief correspondent at Football Italia and Love Sport's Italian football correspondent. Federico Bonazzoli is a name that you probably know, Dom.
No, of him. I'll put it that way. No, the point he did make about Seri going to AC Milan was the point I would have made, that if you're looking at those two sides, it's probably the sides he fits into the most. I know they've just got rid of Gattuso as their manager, but you look at Napoli's midfield and then you look at Inter's midfield, you can't see Seri dislodging anyone in there. He's not better than Alan. He's not better than Brozovic.
But at 15 mil, Dom. He can come in as backup.
Yeah, no, he can come as backup. But I feel like he's at a stage in his career where he's had this year at Fulham, which hasn't worked. He's going to want to be playing first team football. And I think he would get there at AC Milan, but with the financial fair play situation that's going on at AC Milan with him potentially dropping out of Europa League, I think Arsenal, Man United are going to try to find a way to probably do that for next season.
I think there are two other interesting points that I wanted to raise. One is quite funny. Conte was photographed at several Fulham games last year and even at the training ground when Ranieri was in charge. So I think that's quite funny that the Inter Milan links might have come about because of that, that he literally would have seen these players in training already. And secondly, with the whole Seri coming with Le Marchand last year, there was talk...
How much he costed.
That's the point, yeah. We don't know how much Seri... It was 30 million for the two of them. And everyone assumed it was 25 Seri and 5 Le Marchand. But there was something, a conflicting report later in the season that said that it was more 18 for Le Marchand and only 12 for Seri.
Yeah.
And we were just getting around FFP. So who actually knows who actually knows how much Seri costs? I wouldn't be surprised if especially these Italian clubs, you mentioned Inter just being rid of FFP, Milan very much in it, and Napoli not having loads to spend. It'd be interesting how much money he'll actually go for, or what figure will be quoted.
Well, in terms of Seri's need to revitalise his career, why not go back to France? We've seen Sarri go to Chelsea, his stock nominally fall, and yet him then go back and get the biggest job in Italy. Tonghi and Ndombele is looking like leaving Lyon.
You look at Lyon's midfield, right? You look at Lyon's team general. Sarri does not get into that side.
It's also a really
does
exciting
he not
time
if Ndombele goes?
Well, no, because Ndombele plays a totally different role to what John Michael Sarri's going to do. For me, Tanguy Ndombele is up there, one of the best holding midfielders in Europe if you're looking over the last two seasons. I think he is one of the most hot prospects in Europe. You look at Lyon's team, and I just don't see where he gets in. The only French team he's actually been linked with was AS Monaco, who doesn't exactly have the best season this year. They nearly got relegated, for crying out loud. So I mean, I think if he is going to be off, as far as I'm concerned, if he gets late towards the window, they might have to loan him out. But I think that you forget that the European windows are open later than the English window, so there is more time with this deal. Saying that, it is only the middle of June, so there's still 2 months left of the English transfer window open. But talking about another French move, there were links linking Ryan Sessegnon with Paris Saint-Germain, because he does come, I think his family's background is from a French-speaking country. So if the links was, he can speak a bit of French, he might go to Paris Saint-Germain. For me, though, with Ryan Sessegnon, I would rather him go abroad. Although I do feel that if he went to Conte, it would probably bore him to death.
But again, for both Sessegnon and Seri, this applies. It's a really exciting time to go to Italy because of Sarri going back to Juventus. That whole league is having a bit of a shake-up now.
Yeah, the league's finally back on the up after several years of actually decline. I think the last two years it's been much more on the rise, with Rome against Champions League semi-finals and Napoli challenging Juventus. Inter would be a good move because I have a Sessegnon or Seri, because I think if anyone's going to challenge, Juventus next season, it is going to be them, with Sessegnon and Antonio Conte at the helm. He spoke about being a Lippi disciple. For me, Lippi is the best manager been around in the last 40 years.
Don't call me Lippi.
But for me, he is the best manager in the world in the last 40 or 50 years. And he's one of his disciples. And as much as he's ex-Chelsea, I don't really like him, I think in a wing-back system, I do think Sessegnon could thrive in Italy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. Final point, it would be really funny if he went from, or either of these players or both, went from relegation with Fulham to a very realistic chance of winning Serie A the next year with Inter.
Well, I think you're probably right. Quick update for you from the Women's World Cup. The Lionesses looking a bit wobbly. Are they just clinging on here, looking leggy against a lively Japanese side? Still 1-0 up England, but 70 minutes played. There's time for a Japanese equaliser. You'd have thought that might be a bridge too far for Argentina in their game against Scotland. They are now 3-0 down. Scotland's chances of qualifying third from the group, which is a rather odd sentence, looking very, very good. But coming up, Aleksandar Mitrovic. Could he stay after all?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. We're talking about the big Serbian, Aleksandar Mitrovic. Is he staying? Is he off to Spain?
Yeah, I mean, there was links to Real Betis this week. I think the weirdest thing is, obviously, we'll talk about how this move now seems to be off due to the financial situation, but I don't get how you go from Alexander Mitrovic to Borja Iglesias. They're two of the most polar opposite strikers. And if we're looking at Real Betis...
Tell us a bit about Iglesias.
Well, he's more of a forward who's going to press the front line, a bit more agile, a bit more quick.
But could he be their hero?
That's awful, and don't ever speak ever again. But that's why Mitrovic didn't make sense to me. I know
the producer's still laughing. Someone enjoyed it.
But the Mitrovic link to Betis just didn't make sense to me. I know Quique Setién's left Real Betis, but the way they were playing under Quique Setién, I presume they continued the same way, was a very pressing style. And I don't see Mitrovic working in that kind of system. But, you know, apparently the reason the move was off because they tried to bid €20 million plus bonuses. And, you know, the club said no. And I think it says that, you know, Mitrovic earns $4 million a season at Fulham after tax. And I think he's one of the players who was given a contract that didn't include a relegation clause. I think him and Kearney...
Clever business.
Do you think because... he's also been rumoured to... having been offered a new contract.
So that
implies he was...
I think there's probably an extra clause that says maybe if we don't go up by January, or we don't know if we're going up by January, or we don't go up this season, then he's free to leave next summer. And, you know, if we're looking at teams who can sign him, there isn't many who can afford to up or equal what we're paying him. You're only looking at Premier League teams, and I can't see Palace forking out the money. So I think the only realistic option for Mitrovic, if he was to leave, is to go to West Ham. And I think
is he necessarily going to need a pay rise?
It's not a pay rise, but I can't see him taking a pay cut.
Okay.
And I think West Ham is the only team you can afford to buy him. And I think when it comes to this, I think that Mitrovic is more than happy to stay at the club next season, as far as I'm aware from what people are saying. So I think that, you know, it comes to whether West Ham are going to fork up the money, because I don't think we're going to let him go for anything less than £30 million.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. You mentioned Palace there, though, but if they do sell Wan-Bissaka and then maybe Zaha, they have over £100 million to spend right there, and they need to replace two integral players. Like, obviously, that's a big if, but... I think maybe ruling out them just on that is like maybe a bit premature. So the quote you just mentioned there is that he kind of hinted that he'd be happy to stay at Fulham. I also get the impression, you know, and I know we buy or look into this too much, but he has got a young family in London now as well, and he does seem to be settled here. And I think that we know how much he loves the club already.
Well, I think he's spoken about this since he's been in the club in the last 18 months. He wants to be at a club where he feels loved, and I think he does feel like at Fulham. And I think there's more to Mitrovic than him just wanting to be playing at the highest level. I think he does want to be playing at a place where the fans love him, where he's really settled, and I think that's where he is. And I think that's one of the reasons I truly do think he will be staying at the club this summer.
Mitrovic has been talked about as, shall we say, a bit of an enigma. Since he was a kid. I use the word enigma rather than the word firebrand. I could use either. He's a notoriously unpredictable guy. Does that make him more likely to stay at Fulham? Because the expected route here is to go, like, you got relegated, yeah. I'm off. He might not do that.
Yeah, of course. But just quickly on that, when was the last time he sent off?
Like, yeah, Fulham, he's...
No, I'm not saying he gets sent off a lot.
No, but you're implying that, aren't you?
To be honest, I'm more implying... Firstly, he does have a serious record of red cards in the past. But what I was getting at more than that is just that he doesn't do what you'd expect. On the pitch, off the pitch, he's not a straightforward bloke, and he won't necessarily make the straightforward choice.
No, I get that, but I also think everyone talks about the reputation of Mitrovic, but we haven't seen any of that reputation of being a fiery character since he joined the club. I think the most fiery he's got wasn't even when Kamara took the penalty off him. He seemed perfectly happy to he gave Kamara the ball, kissed him on the head, and let him take the penalty. Yes, he missed it. The most fiery he's got was when Jack Grealish tried to snap Kearney in the playoff final, I think.
and you talk about reputation, it goes both ways, you know, because the reputation he's got in the Championship is that he's an absolute bully, and no centre defenders are going to, you know, want to come and play against him. Like, I guess it seems a long way off now.
In that 6 months, he's the best striker. He's the best striker the Championship seen since Louis Saha.
Exactly, and like that's not going to change. Like even if he might have had his head turned a little bit, or he might be a bit depressed about relegation, as we all are, he's still going to be.
No, he was depressed because Ranieri was manager.
But he's still going to be one of the best players in the Championship. Either way,
he will be the best player in the Championship. Like there's no one who come anywhere near him is here his level. If you remember last time, he scored 20 goals and he only joined in January.
And he was half fit for most of that time as well.
Yeah. So how many do you think he could score this time round?
Everyone was like, oh, double it, you get 40. No, that's not how this works. But I do think if he stayed, he'd get minimum 20. you get 20, 25 goals.
And does that get Fulham promoted?
Well, maybe not, because you've seen this year, like, Pukki got, what, 29, but then Che Adams got, like, 26, something like that, over 25. And Birmingham were a mid-table team.
Well, look at Neil Maupay.
Yeah, well, the vital thing in the Championship for a team who's going to go up or a team who's going to challenge is you need goals from all over the park. If you look at just the year we got knocked out in the playoff semi-finals to Reading, both Kane and Johansson got 10-plus goals and 10-plus assists. You know, we literally didn't have a striker. When we beat Newcastle away, we had like, who was it, Aluko and Cabano in like intertwining as false nines.
Chris Martin.
Yeah, like, you don't... Getting a 25-30 goal season striker is great, but it's all about the goals coming from the rest of the park for you to be a successful team in the Championship. And I think you know Kearney and Johansson can score in the Championship, so I think we've got that in the midfield. It's just whether our wingers can contribute. But I think with the wingers, it's more them creating the chances for Mitrovic and allowing the midfielders to come into play.
We kind of got ahead of ourselves now and assume that Mitrovic is staying,
which
is a fun like thought to have, because I do think so much of our season rides on him staying. Like,
oh yeah, it does, 100%.
And it's weird to think that you know, a one player can influence a team that much. And I've never really thought of us as kind of a one team player.
We wouldn't be this worried about Cess leaving. We wouldn't be this worried about Kearney leaving.
No, exactly.
But Mitrovic, because of the position he plays and how good he was in the division last time, I think it's like, we can't afford to lose this guy. If we are going to have a promotion bid, he's going to be the vital part of it.
Yeah, and again, that is the key. I mean, if he leaves, we won't have promotion bids. It's that simple.
If he leaves, are you replacing him? Are you spending a lot of that money inside?
Yeah, I mean, of course we are. Our only other striking options are Rui Font and Abubakar Kamara.
So who could you
taking
bring
us
in?
To Wembley?
Well,
away.
Obviously, as every transfer window of all time, we are linked with Dwight Gayle. I think we're favourites to sign him. Obviously, there was substance to the rumour that we inquired about Britta Sombalonga. You know, so we are getting linked to players who would do it in the Championship, but not in the Premier League. So I think that's another thing with Mitrovic. If we then did get promoted next season, he'd be more than capable to just, we don't need to replace him for the Premier League. Like, what, did he get 11 goals this season for a team who got relegated? That's not too bad at all. You know, if your striker's getting double figures in the Premier League, you're like, that's all right.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, those Championship strikers we just mentioned. I feel like they've been there for so long. And, like, you know, I always kind of say that there's a reason these players are playing at that level, you know. Like, Sombalonga has been there for a while and he's bagged goals at Forest and Borough now.
It was like Jordan, it's what Jordan Rose used to be like.
And he's only just got promoted as, like, back fourth choice striker at Norwich or whatever. Like, and he's just about to get his chance in the Premier League. There are strikers who just do it in the Championship.
And but don't. Then, in the Premier League.
Exactly.
Well, Dwight Gayle's the classic example, because he's had more chance in the Premier League than most and has never quite got it right.
It's so noticeable in that position, though, as well. Like, because with midfielders, you've had, like, Jeff Hendricks, step up to Burnley, and similar players like that. But strikers, where your goal is to, you know, score goals, they're just... You fall away. And
I think it's because they get 25, 30 goals in the Championship and you're expecting them to get at least, what, 10, 15 in the Premier League. It's not going to happen. With a centre-half like Steve Cook at Bournemouth, you expect him just... He's just defending, if you know what I mean. There's not that much reliance on the player.
His job hasn't changed, yeah.
Yeah.
How likely is it then that Mitrovic stays, as a final point?
I think it's very likely. I think he wants to stay. I don't think he wants to leave. I think that's the thing here.
I'd say 50-50.
I think it's more 60-40, because I genuinely don't... The only way he's going to leave is if someone bids £30-35 million for him.
Which could yet happen, of course.
Yeah.
But sounding optimistic from a Fulham point of view. Quick update for you from the Women's World Cup. It's looking rather less optimistic for Scotland. It's now Scotland 3, Argentina 2. Still 9 minutes to play, plus stoppages. Argentina, from nowhere, are back in this... England, of course, are hanging on. The Lionesses lead Japan 1-0, 9 minutes left on the clock. As things stand, they top Group D and it's coming home.
This is Love Sport.
We're not Real Madrid, we're not Barcelona, but even those teams sometimes lose some youth academy products. Could the same be about to be said of Fulham? We're hearing that various youngsters, Dom, could be heading off.
Yeah, the one that started off linking in the last couple of days is Cody Drama, who is probably a player that not even most Fulham fans don't really know who he is. He's a young fullback. He's done very, very well in our youth teams over the last couple of seasons. He's got an absolute screamer this season in the Youth Cup. And, you know, he's linked with a move to Leeds United. And, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about Harvey later, but it's another player whose contract's expiring next summer. And they probably just, like, well, he is probably part of our future first team plans in 4 or 5 years' time, but if he's not going to sign a new contract, then it's probably best from the club's perspective to sell him on if a team's going to be interested. I think, you know, a team like Leeds United, you know, he's not going to get into the Leeds United's first team, but if they sign the contracts, you know, he's going to have another 3 or 4 years to develop a Leeds United, and under a manager like Marcelo Bielsa, I don't see anything wrong with that.
No, and a quick update for you from the Women's World Cup. It is England 2, Japan 0. That's a very good scoreline indeed. A terrible goal celebration. It couldn't matter less. It's looking like the Lionesses are going to top Group D. Wonderful stuff. Japan now, having looked like they might get back into it, sinking without a trace with just 6 minutes left on the clock.
You have to see another player that everyone was on everyone's lips a couple of months ago was Harvey Elliott. And Barcelona and Real Madrid are both reportedly considering a swoop for the teenager because his contract expires in a month and he doesn't look like he's going to be signing a new one, and obviously he'll be leaving on a free transfer.
Terrible hair.
Yeah, awful. It's not acceptable.
He's got 4 different hairstyles, hasn't he?
But you know, for us, it's probably a bad thing he's going abroad because, you know, you get less money if a youngster, you get less compensation. I think the Mail reporting you only get £200,000, whereas if you went to an English club, it would be into the millions. But you know,
it would go to a tribunal. I mean, Liverpool had that with Danny Ings, where they thought they were being really clever, nicking him on a free, and then had to pay the best part of £10 million.
Really? Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I remember Daniel Sturridge went to a tribunal a while ago as well.
Was that when he went
Danny
City
Ings,
to Chelsea?
I think, was big money.
Man City
to Chelsea. So, it looks like Barcelona, Real Madrid, and RB Leipzig, and just as much as I don't like RB Leipzig and what they stand for, you know, I think that that'd probably be the best move for him because he's not going to get anywhere near Barcelona or Real Madrid's first team, especially after scenes they've had. They're going to be signing all the megastars this year. So a move to RB Leipzig, as much as I just don't like the club, it would be the best move for his career if he was to move abroad. I mean,
and RB Leipzig, of course, do have history in terms of not just showing interest in, but actually playing English talent. They took, of course, Emil Smith Rowe from Arsenal on loan last
season. Adam Lookman, when he went out, was great. I think when Adam Lookman was there for, was it a 6 month loan spell?
Yeah.
I think he had the best like goals to minute ratio in the league. It was better than Robert Lewandowski's while he was there, albeit he just kept scoring off the bench. So you're not really going to have a low minute goals to minute ratio.
Yeah, but Lookman really broke through. Smith Rowe didn't really get a chance, but that was because of injury.
Yeah, he went there because of injury. But even if you look at other German teams, you look at Reece Nelson on loan at Hoffenheim last year. He looked great. Obviously, everyone talks about Jadon Sancho at Borussia Dortmund. But, you know, it seems, you know, Schalke from Chelsea? So, you know, German teams are interested in our players and it's going to get them football then, you know, because he played quite a few games for us last season, but he didn't play many. Like, he played at Mill when he was a 15-year-old, came on against Wolves to be the youngest ever Premier League player to overtake Fulham legend Matthew Briggs. So, I think that, you know, I think, yeah, I move. If he's not going to sign a new contract, to move abroad probably is better for him than going to an English club. And although we'll get less money, it'll probably be better for his development.
I'm quite surprised by this, actually. Normally, we're quite good at getting youth players to stay. And, you know, the classic photo of them signing on their 17th birthday has happened, you know, a few times. And it's interesting because with Fulham as well, I know we're in the Championship, but we're still an ambitious club who's hopefully going to get back to the Premier League. Even if it takes us 3 years, he'll only be 19. You know, like, he's only 16 years old. And at Fulham as well, he's been given already, not just shown this available, a clear path to the first team. He's already played for the first team. I don't really understand what he's expecting from his career at this point, you know? Like, is he expecting to go to Leipzig or any club in Europe and start playing week in, week out? Probably not.
Because if he was like 19 or 20, I perfectly understand his move.
Yeah, what's he expecting from Fulham this year? What are Fulham expecting from him? I don't know. Like, he's a good player. I'm sure he could do a job as a squad player in the Championship, but it seems quite surprising to me. And
we also spoke about RB Leipzig and all these players who come through, but then they isn't all gone well. You look at Oliver Burke, who left Nottingham Forest, I believe, for RB Leipzig, and it never really worked. Then he went to West Brom, didn't work there. Would he go to Celtic maybe towards the end of last season?
Yeah,
hasn't really worked for him. So it'll be interesting to see if he will be one of the success stories, or he could just end up like Oliver Burke here, really. Because Oliver Burke, well, he was playing for Nottingham Forest at the time, and you know, Harvey Elliott hasn't really played for us. He hasn't started a game yet.
I think with a quick one, Oli Burt, like he was signed by Pulis. I mean, we know what Pulis does to players. But you know,
he wasn't
like
a centre back, so Pulis had no use for him.
But I think Nagelsmann's taking over at Leipzig next year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And that's as far as my knowledge goes. I don't know what type of football Nagelsmann plays or anything like that, or how good he is. Renowned, what his reputation is like through in terms of bringing through youth. But I do know that Leipzig have a very young team in general, and obviously they are in the Champions League next year as well. So it's not like, you know, he's been linked with a tiny club here. Like they're a, you know, the most hated club in Germany apart from Bayern, but they are a very good club in Germany. Which again, is Harvey Elliott good enough to go there? Based on, you know, half a Premier League game away at Wolves and you know, less than that away at Millwall in the League Cup. No, is the answer.
I think that the issue is here. He doesn't look like he's going to sign that new contract. So I think it looks like we're going to have to sell him.
But why? I don't understand why we haven't been able to persuade him to stay.
Yeah, no, that is odd. Maybe there was people in his ear before he even made his debut.
Yeah, but there is a more basic thing here, which is these guys, particularly when they're young kids, aren't necessarily going to look at everything in an objective manner. And if you're Harvey Elliott and you do have an agent in your ear, even just the name of Barcelona or Real Madrid, you are going to be dreaming of yourself playing in the Bernabeu, and you're not really going to bring logic into it.
He doesn't want to become the next Dale Jennings.
Dale Jennings, a great man. He went to Bayern Munich and then ended up back at Tranmere, and I won't hear a word against him.
Well, I don't know. I think the only reason why he is linked away and why we would sell him is just simply because he's not going to sign a new contract. I think that's the only thing that's going to happen. And we're not selling him. Like, he's leaving at the end of his contract and joining somewhere else. We're just getting the compensation fee.
Well, he hasn't even got a contract. He's not a professional. Like, he's on, like, a scholar's contract or whatever it is. Like, yeah, the whole world of, you know, youth transfers is mucky, as Chelsea found out thanks to their transfer ban. But but this seems just a bit odd to me. I remember another one of our, you know, starlets, as it were, is Matt O'Riley. He was linked with Dortmund quite recently as well, wasn't he?
I think Matt O'Riley is the best player in our academy by an absolute country mile. I think he's the only one who's, I think he's ready. He's ready for the first time. He's a tall lad. He's a physical lad. He's been playing more of a deep line role this season in the under-23s. And I think on him, he is the best player in our youth academy.
Well, who better to judge the qualities of a deep line midfield player than a certain Mr. Scott Parker? Coming up, it is Championship fixture release day tomorrow. Obviously, we don't get to pick. But if we did, who would we like?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and England are seconds, well, a minute and a half away from confirming their place at the top of Group D. It's the Lionesses 2, Japan 0, and Scotland clinging on as well. It's a good evening for the British teams in the Women's World Cup. A quick word on fixture release day tomorrow. You're going to find out where you'll be heading on that opening day. Where would you like?
Wigan, Preston, Sheffield Wednesday, Leeds or Barnsley.
Was that a league of the price of pints in the Championship in descending order?
No, I just, first away day of the season, you just want a good train journey.
Yeah, and also, although I would tend to add Middlesbrough in there, let's just get out of the way.
Middlesbrough, right, they're one of the best away pubs in the country, in Barcuda, right? You can get VK fish bowls. I mean, what more do you want on an away day?
Argentina 3, Scotland 3.
Oh,
95th minute equaliser from the spot. That sends Scotland out of the Women's World Cup unless they can score a goal now. Heartbreak for them. Well, they probably shouldn't have dropped all their best players and not really bothered against Japan. Call me old-fashioned.
Is that what they did?
Effectively. Erin Cuthbert was basically the only relevant name in there.
Interesting. I don't know.
Women's football expert Johnny Borough.
Oh, you know me. Women's football show here on Love Sport Radio with more experts than me, it has to be said. Ella German and Charlton striker Lily Ag every Friday, 7 till 8, for all the latest on the Lionesses and beyond. So you're saying Middlesbrough?
I said Middlesbrough just to get out of the way.
That's what you're saying. Pick one. Pick one
Wigan.
Pint.
Wigan away.
Wigan away.
I would also like 3 points.
That's a bit much to ask from Santa this year. We'll see what we can do.
So I would like a nice, easy promoted team or in turmoil, like Charlton.
You also are next to your house, is basically what you're saying.
Dear Santa, this season I've been a very good boy, so I would like Alexander Mitrovic to stay and 3 points on the first day of the season. Dom.
I like three was more than just the first day of the season, you know.
If it's anything like this year, you've got a feature to tell us about.
Yeah, so this came up in one of my group chats earlier. I don't know how it came up, but we were discussing the worst ever nicknames for Fulham players. And so I asked for some responses on the Fulhamish Instagram. You can follow us at Fulhamish Pod. And, you know, I thought I'd go through some of them. So I started off with Putney Perlow, which... I don't know which monstrosity made this up about Jamie O'Hara in his when he had that good 1 month spell in his first three or four games for the club. But yeah, so we went over through. We had Jake Conroy 96 come in with Simon Davis with Digger.
I think that's a long standing one, isn't it?
It is a very long standing one for him. The Thames Barrier with Hughes and Hangland.
Yes, bad, yes, but
There was a worse one for Aaron Hughes, and I'll come to it later. There was Harry Prowse with just Cyrus Christie. I'm all for that. Sammy came in with Melvinho for Andy Melville.
No, I rate that one.
That is a throwback.
Sam Story with Bairdinho for Chris Baird.
I rate that as well. Any addition of Inyo to a British non-flair player, I've got time
Tommy
for.
Taylor, which I believe this was probably about Jean-Michel Serra with Ivorian Xavi.
Have a day off.
And then Tommy Taylor again with Airplane in the 04, Vincenzo Montella. That even wasn't his nickname.
Exactly, his nickname was Little Airplane.
Jack Smith 8183 with Ginger Iniesta for Steve Sidwell.
Now rate that one.
So it started off in the group chat, and I'll go through some of the we came up with, me and my friends. We had Ross McScormack.
Of course. Scully Woodrow.
Aaron Hughes, that team we called a Fulham.
Oh my God. That should be a crime.
Yeah, no. I didn't need to remember that. Marcus Bestinelli.
No. And crime.
And because of his goal against Middlesbrough, Collins John.
That I quite like.
Yeah.
Do you remember
Aaron Hughes? That team we called a Fulham is the worst nickname for any player that anyone's ever had.
He also had a terrible chant.
Yeah, Aaron Hughes. I hate chants that just literally involve saying the player's name.
Don't go to Chelsea then, mate. You'll be in trouble.
I remember 15,000 volts because he scored
15,000th goal in the Premier League.
Yes.
Sorry, what?
So Moritz Volz away at Chelsea, I think it was around Christmas time, scored the 15,000th goal in the Premier League history. So people start calling him 15,000 volts.
That's funny. I rate that. That's actually really good.
We've had some absolutely terrible nicknames, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean... Even in the current squad, they've all got nicknames, but it's not quite as funny as I love watching Mick McCarthy interviews with players because the nicknames there are so unimaginative as well. You know, David McGoldrick was just Dids, and everything you just add an E to the end. You know,
yeah.
Stokesy, whatever. Like
McCarthy E.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But there are some hilarious ones. Another honourable mention is Rob Elliott. Newcastle fourth choice goalkeeper, whose nickname and on Twitter is the Dilsh.
Ooh, that sounds in some way sort of rude. The Dilsh. sounds rather ominous.
Yeah.
Don't come anywhere near me with that Dilsh.
He was asked on Twitter, I remember, don't ask me why I know this. He was asked on Twitter, can he explain your nickname? And he just replied, no.
Right, hang on. What that means is that he absolutely definitely can, and he's not willing to on a public forum. It is full time, by the way, in the Women's World Cup. England have done it. They've topped Group D. They've beaten Japan 2-0. And if the Lionesses' good form wasn't good news enough, we can double up because Scotland absolutely bottled it. 3-0 up and flying. They threw it away. 95th minute penalty. 3-3 draw with Argentina out the Women's World Cup. Bang, crash, wallop. Thank you very much. How far can the Lionesses go?
All the way. I mean, from what we've seen, you know, Japan were the team, if you're looking in this group, who I would assume would pose us one of the biggest troubles, because, you know, we haven't exactly got the best record against them.
2015 and, finalists.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're a very, very good team, and we've made them look quite ordinary today. And the Lionesses can go all the way. And, you know, think about it, we made 8 changes today, and we've looked fairly comfortable apart from the 15-20 minute spell when Japan, they're trying to get back into the game. But yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you look at the US, you always got to look at the USA as the favourites for the tournament, because they're just world class when it comes to women's football. So, but I think, yeah, there's no reason why the women's team can't win this tournament. They've looked very, very comfortable in the games, and it looks like the confidence is growing and growing within the camp.
Are they going to regret winning the group though, Johnny?
Oh, this is all nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Listen, whoever England draw their next game will be in the round of 16 this Sunday at 4:30. Lots to look forward to. Any nicknames for this current crop of England players?
Lionesses.
Well, you know, Steph Houtinho or
Houtinho, I quite like.
Karen Barsley, surely, like, I don't know.
Bards,
yeah.
It's really hard to do good ones, actually. That this is what you realise. We sit here and we throw stones from our glass houses, because what's the best Fulham nickname you've ever come up with, Dom Betts?
Well, mine. Yeah. I'm not very good at nicknames. Like, I've got chance wise, like the Maxine Le Marchand chant is all my making.
What's that?
If you've been to a Fulham game season, you would have heard my...
Well, I obviously haven't, so educate me.
To Los Bamba with Maxine Le Marchand. He plays for Fulham with Seri and Fabri. I don't know, it's just catchy, you know?
It caught on big time.
Did it?
Yeah.
Right. Believe it or not.
Where? Our sort of producer. And on that cynical note, it's been a fantastic show. Lovely to have you both here with me, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. You'll have to join us next week on the Fulham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.